Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Protecting her sister's good name. Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's advanced program. I'm Linda, your host. Today is May 30th, and we are continuing our arts article that we started yesterday. It is entitled For the Love of Jane Austen. And to continue this conversation about Jane Austen and the newest TV series on Jane Austen, Miss Austen, with me today is Rebecca. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, Linda. It's great to be back.
Yes, we were engaged in talking about Jane Austen, all of the wonderful attributes of her novels and her writing. And we also touched on the Jane Austen universe, the Austen Cinematic and Literary Universe, the ACLU, which is not a real thing, but we know that the universe, the vast collection of Jane Austen's works and all of the works inspired by it, is very much true and something that grows constantly. And we talked about why Jane Austen is so timeless. She was a keen observer. She was a great writer. She was witty. She was so funny. Her writing is described as dry comedy, right? And we learned yesterday what dry comedy is. It's when somebody says something funny, but they are in all seriousness saying it. And her novels are ironic, but her novels have lasted the test of time. Have passed the test of time, and they have lived on for two centuries. Right? We've been reading about and hearing about Jane Austen for 200 years. And the newest, or the TV series that we're talking about, Miss Austen, it's based on a book, and I think the book is pretty true to, or the TV series is pretty true to the book. I watched both. And it is like watching and reading a Jane Austen novel. So if you love Jane Austen, then you will enjoy Miss Austen. And yesterday, who were we introduced to? Who do we meet in the Miss Austen series?
Well, first, Jane's sister, Cassandra. So Cassandra is Jane's only sister. Like Linda said that they had a family of
eight children. Yeah.
Eight children, and there's only two females. So Cassandra was Jane's sister. They're very close. Mm-hmm. And then we also meet two other females, and these are the daughters of Jane Austen's friend Eliza.
Yes.
Because Eliza's husband is dying.
He passes away.
And then he has two daughters. So Eliza and her husband, they have two daughters, and their names are Isabella and Beth.
Yeah. And the main one in the series is Isabella. She is the one that has stayed home. She is also unmarried, like Jane and her sister Cassandra. She remained unmarried. She took care of her parents. She took care of her elderly parents. First, her mother passed away, and her father recently passed away. So Cassandra is going to help Isabella to transition right into a new life, because without her parents there, she also will lose the house. So she has to find somewhere else to live. And that is one of Cassandra's jobs that she has, or she takes it upon herself. But she also has another reason to go to the house immediately. She almost immediately goes there after getting news that Isabella's father has passed away. And what is that reason?
And that reason is she wants to take all the letters that Jane Austen wrote to Eliza, because Cassandra really wants to get all the letters that Jane Austen ever wrote. And we learned yesterday that Cassandra actually burned all the letters later.
The bulk. Yeah.
Yeah, she burned most of those letters before she herself died.
Mm-hmm.
She burned them because she wanted to protect Jane Austen's reputation. So she wanted, I could say, she wanted a curated. When you curate something, it means that you decide what's important, what's not important. She wanted the world to see Jane Austen in a specific way.
Mm-hmm.
And anything that doesn't align with it, she destroys.
Yeah. So there are probably things in those letters that would take away from that reputation or that memory of Jane Austen, and her sister would not allow that. So that's why she quickly went to the friend, the house of her friend, Eliza Fowle, to get those letters to make sure that they didn't fall into the wrong hands. Because there was a potential person or potential hands that they could fall into, and that would be disastrous. So let's hear who that was. Also after the letters is Cassandra's self-important sister-in-law, Mary, who is also Eliza's sister, who thinks they could provide material for a book on her late husband, Austen brother James. Cassandra finds and reads them secretly, into a series of flashbacks, some happy, some regretful, as she reflects upon her life with Jane and paths taken and not taken. Each storyline also finds the Austens and Fowles displaced from their homes into reduced circumstances. The Austen parents, optimistic father, and somewhat hysterical mother, could easily serve as Mr. and Mrs. Bennet in a Pride and Prejudice adaptation. But the main thrust of the series is sisterly love and self-sacrifice, tangled with Austen-esque questions of marriage and financial security, both between Cassandra and Jane, and in the present-day storyline, Isabella and Beth Fowle. Okay, so who is after these letters besides Cassandra?
Well, it's Cassandra's sister-in-law, Mary. And then there's a word we use here to describe Mary. She's self-important. So
yeah.
Someone who is self-important, they think very highly of themselves, usually very stuck up. And usually when we say someone is self-important, it's a negative connotation.
Yes.
This is
yes.
negative. This person has a very high opinion of themselves, and usually they're not worthy of that high opinion.
Yes, usually. So she puts herself before everyone else. She thinks that she is more important than everyone else. And this character, she's also Eliza's sister, right? The friend of Jane and Cassandra is Eliza Fowle. And this is her real sister, who was married to their brother, James Austen. So they are connected in many different ways. But Mary is one of those detestable characters. You just don't like her. And we find some of these characters in Jane's novels, right? The characters that are just so unlikable. But she bases her characters off of real life. So she did have someone like this in her real life, right? Her sister-in-law, her brother's wife, Mary.
Well, many of us do have access to these people in our lives too. They might not be in your family, but you might meet them at work or you might meet them in different settings.
Mm-hmm.
So these people do exist.
Yes. I immediately think of the sister-in-law in Sense and Sensibility.
Yes.
Fanny Dashwood. She's so insensitive, so selfish, and just undermining the things that Eleanor and Mary Ann did or said. And it's like, oh, now I know the inspiration for that character. All right. So Mary wants the letters because she thinks that they can provide material for a book on her late husband and the brother of Cassandra and Jane, her husband, James. And she, besides thinking of herself as important, she also thought that James was a great writer. She worshipped his writing. I think she worshipped him. At least that's how it's portrayed in Miss Austen, the series and the novel. She adored everything that her husband, James, did. and she belittled the writing of Jane Austen, who was the real, like...
writer.
Yeah.
Wow.
The master writer. So it's just that part is really funny in the novel, just how she goes on and on about James, but it's really, yeah, and how Jane and Cassandra make fun of her. Cassandra, fortunately, finds the letters first, and she reads them secretly. What does that take us into?
Well, here the TV series uses flashbacks. So flashback is like, for example, when you watch a movie or TV series, and right now we are in 2026, but then in the character's mind, maybe the character goes back to his or her childhood,
mm-hmm.
20 years earlier. In the movie, we see the character as a child.
Mm-hmm.
So a flashback, just you go back in time.
Yeah.
You go back in time to something significant or insignificant that happened in your life.
Yes. And so these letters are reminding her of times in the past. So they flash back. They go back to when Jane and Cassandra are much younger. And some of these memories and flashbacks are happy, right? Some are regretful. Some are sad. But it allows Cassandra to reflect upon her life with Jane and the paths taken and not taken. And here I read that as romantic paths. Mm. Like they do explore this in the series, how potential suitors, there were potential suitors that there it could have been a romantic relationship if they had pursued it. But yeah, so that would have been a path not taken. So each storyline also finds the Austens and Fowles displaced from their homes into reduced circumstances, right? So both the families are experiencing this. So we have this parallel action, right? These mirrored themes we mentioned yesterday. This is both happening. This is happening in both timelines. The Austens get displaced and the Fowles get displaced, or particularly Isabella Fowle. And this term, reduced circumstances, what does that mean, Rebecca?
It just means you're a lot more poor than you were before.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So you have a lot less money. And it's a very old-fashioned term,
reduced circumstances.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't say that. We don't really use that today, but there are, it still definitely happens today, but we don't use that particular terminology. So the Austen parents are described in this way. The father is optimistic and the mother is hysterical. If someone is hysterical, what rules in their lives?
Well, they can't control their emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So they have huge extremes. They get very angry. They get very excited.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I can think of people around us. Okay, hysterical. Perhaps you have people around you who are hysterical. They just have very extreme emotions. And they not only have those emotions, they also show those emotions.
Yes.
They show their strong feelings.
Yeah. They're ruled or controlled by their emotions. They aren't able to control them. And so whatever they're feeling, they immediately express that, right? So the Austen mother, she is very hysterical. Like she's always flapping about. And it says here that the parents could easily serve as Mr. and Mrs. Bennet in a Pride and Prejudice adaptation. If you've seen the adaptations, the movie adaptations of Pride and Prejudice, you can recall Mrs. Bennet like flapping around, getting hysterical, getting so excited. Oh, the men are coming to the house. The gentlemen are coming to the house, and just getting too excited. And then the next moment, she will be completely depressed and sad and on the floor crying because, oh, no, they didn't come. And yeah, so
right.
Someone who can't
really
control their emotions.
I'm really scared of people like that, actually. We were talking off air, but earlier, yeah. I like people of balance. Okay.
Yes, we do prefer more stability.
Yeah,
that is preferable. Okay. But the main thrust of this series is sisterly love and self-sacrifice. Thrust here, it just means the purpose, the meaning, the aim of the series. It is the love between the sisters, and we see that very much so with Jean and her sister, and we see that somewhat with Isabella and her sisters, although she definitely doesn't have a close relationship with her sisters like Jean and Cassandra did. And we also have sisters, Rebecca. I think we feel that sisterly love and bond with our sisters because we are both the, like, our sisters and us, we're the only girls in the family. So we bond
yes, I think
a lot
so.
More.
I think we love our sisters, yeah.
Yeah, and self-sacrifice. Isabella sacrificed her youth, right? She was responsible for taking care of her elderly parents. She nursed her father up until he died, and she probably did that for her mother as well. So she's made a lot of sacrifice. Cassandra has as well. We get into that when we see the flashbacks of her reading, when she's reading the letters. She goes back to when she's younger. The sacrifice she made, sacrifices she made for her family, like both for Jean and for her parents. So these themes are tangled with Austen-esque questions of marriage and financial security. So these are things that were very important and relevant to both sets of sisters and families. So both between Cassandra and Jane and the present day storyline, Isabella and Beth Fowle. All right. We mentioned earlier being an unmarried woman was not a good thing back then. It was very difficult. Like if you found yourself as an unmarried woman, you would be described as a spinster, right? Which was a negative thing. And you depended on the mercy of your family members,
yes.
right? Because you didn't have a dowry, you didn't have inheritance. You're a burden on your family. So Cassandra.
So being married was the wise financial choice back then. Because back then, of course, women did not work. Most women did not get educated. They did not work. So if you don't have work, you don't have income. So for financial security, if you want to be safe financially, the smart thing would be to get married. And I mean, if you look at all of Jane Austen's novels, that is why the mothers, especially the mothers, are always so worried. Is my daughter going to get married to a financially stable man or not?
Yeah.
And that concern drives their entire behavior.
Exactly, yeah. Their whole purpose, right, is to get married.
Yes.
Right? They have to find a husband that will provide stability for them, and their job is to get married and have kids and raise a family. So if they aren't able to do that, then they face a very unstable or questionable future.
Yes.
Because they don't, as Rebecca said, have a means of sustaining themselves, usually. And Jane and her sister, they didn't receive much education, but still, Jane was able to write these amazing books that were ahead of her time because she was a voracious reader. She read and read, and that is why, part of the reason why was such a good author, because she didn't get much in the way of formal education. All right, let us listen to our last reading now. Achieving happiness? I must know if she is to be married, cries Isabella, regarding Jane Elliott, the heroine of Jane's Persuasion, which Cassandra has been reading aloud. Is that the only outcome that would be happy? Asks Cassandra. Yes! Oh, Isabella, there are so many other ways for women like us to find happiness, says Cassandra, underlining the comparison between the two sets of sisters. Writing was Jane's greatest love. She took great comfort from the heroes in her books. But in life, no man was ever worthy. Like Isabella, the viewer has their own ideas of happiness, of course, and all things being equal, would prefer a world in which romantic love comes to all. Then again, few of us are geniuses dedicated first to work that will transcend time. And not to spoil what must be obvious to everyone but the characters, But the Fowl's story does provide clever opportunities for a conclusion more in keeping with the Austin corpus. The finale should run you through a pack of handkerchiefs, unless you are some sort of heartless monster. Okay, we mentioned earlier that a woman back then, like, her goal was to get married for financial security, for stability. She needed to get married. And this line by Isabella, right, they are actually reading one of Jane's novels, Persuasion. And they do have a reading in the evening. Cassandra reads it out loud. And Isabella is really getting into the novel. And she wants to know about Anne Elliot, the heroine of Persuasion, right? So she says, I must know if she is to be married. And what is Cassandra's response?
It's a very good response, even for 2026. The response is that the only outcome that would be happy? So Cassandra is trying to help Isabella question the premise,
mm-hmm.
like whether getting married is the only way to be happy.
Right, because that's obviously what she's been taught, right? And that is what she believes, like that in order to be happy, she needs to be married, right? And then Cassandra goes on to say, oh, Isabella, there are so many other ways for women like us, women, unmarried women like us, to find happiness. And Cassandra is speaking from experience because she remained unmarried her whole life, right? And so this is underlining, yeah, the comparison, the difference between, or the similarities between the two sisters, or the two sets of sisters, right? So she goes on to say that writing was Jane's love, and she took great comfort from the heroes in her books. But in life, was there a man worthy of her?
No man was ever worthy.
Yeah, she couldn't find a man that was worthy of her. Maybe because, like, her ideal was so high. Like, she had written about the ideal man, the perfect man, and so probably in real life, that doesn't exist. And so it would just be a disappointment for her. So, but she did have love. Writing was her greatest love. And I'm sure Cassandra found her love in life outside of marriage. So we learned that Isabella, like the viewer, has her own idea of happiness, right? And all things being equal, would prefer a world in which romantic love comes to all. And I mean, that's what Jane Austen's novels always end up with, right? It
Yes.
ends in marriage, right? It ends up with the heroine finding romantic love and living happily ever after.
Maybe that's because Jane was never married. So that's why her heroines are always happily married.
Yeah. Well, it always ends that way, right?
Yes.
We don't continue to learn about, like, maybe 10 years into the marriage, 20 years into the marriage, after children. For other people in the novel, we do get a glimpse of that because usually the heroine has a sister who's married with kids and, you know, she helps to take care of the kids. So we do get a glimpse of how Jane Austen viewed marriage. But usually for our heroines, they get married. Okay, that's the end of the story.
Right? Yes,
so she probably doesn't want to describe all of the other stuff, right? That maybe less happy stuff that goes with marriage. All right, so describes Jane Austen as a genius, which we agree with, right? So she was dedicated first to her work, right? She did sacrifice maybe some personal happiness in romantic love, but that allowed her to be able to write these timeless novels. And Cassandra, her sister, also mentioned she also sacrificed a lot. In the series, they do introduce someone who could have potentially been her romantic partner, but she refused him. And that part was probably made up, or maybe there were more liberties taken with that relationship, but is described as someone she really loved, right? Because her first love, Tom, she was engaged to Eliza's brother-in-law, Tom Fowle, and he ended up dying when he went on he went on an expedition and he ended up dying on it. So she lost her fiancé, and then she never remarried. And in the series, they make it very dramatic because she had promised him before he left that she would never marry anyone else. And so she has to keep that promise. And when this other man comes into her life, she feels that she has to keep that promise, even though Tom didn't want to hold her to that promise. She created that. So there are parts in the series that they are more imagined than what actually happened in real life, but it does show the sacrifice that Cassandra made. And that is probably what will make you cry, right? That will make you go through a pack of handkerchiefs, right? The handkerchiefs are the square pieces of cloth that we use to blow our nose or wipe our tears with. But having a happy marriage or ending in a happy marriage would be more in line with the Austin corpus. And this word corpus just means the collection of Jane's writing of a particular person. In this case, it is Jane. So like we said, her heroines usually end getting engaged or at least getting married. But it doesn't have to be that way, right? You can find happiness in other ways. It's not always through marriage. Well, friends, thank you for joining us today, and we hope that you will come back for tomorrow's program. For now, I'm Linda.
I'm Rebecca.
Saying goodbye.
Bye-bye.